Welcome to Gorgeous Entertainment on Radio Gorgeous. Today with me is Emma Hall, who is currently producing Collective Rage, a play in Five Bettys by Jen Silverman at the Southwark Playhouse. It will be playing January 24th through February 17th. She is also the co-artistic director and co-founder of Antic Face, who are producing this show. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Emma Hall.
Thank you very much for having me.
Could you tell us about Collective Rage, a play in Five Bettys by Jen Silverman?
I absolutely can. So I first read Collective Rage, a play in Five Bettys, when I was commissioning editor for New Writing at Oberon Books, where I worked for 2 years. And there were a couple of plays I read there, which I just squirreled away for my own purposes and thought, you know what, I'm going to produce that one day. And when I read it, I thought, oh my God, this is like a bomb going off. It is one of the most original, explosive, interesting plays I've read in a really long time. And I instantly contacted Jen and Jen's agent and said, please, please, can I have the rights? And luckily, they are very keen for it to be done in London. So I should mention this is her UK premiere. Jen is already a really big deal in the States. She's off in LA doing writing commissions and all sorts of things. And she has been a finalist for the Susan Blackburn Smith Award, which is a fantastic award for female writers on both sides of the pond. And her agent and her were luckily really happy for us to stage the UK premiere. It is a show about five New York women, diverse in age, ethnicities, sexualities, from all different backgrounds, who meet, fall in love, rehearse a play, A Summer's Midnight Dream, which you might be able to guess is a queer version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's about their relationships, which come about from that. It is about boxing. It's about theatre. It's about love. It's heartbreaking. And more than anything, it is hilarious. It's a comedy.
Excellent. It sounds riotous.
It is a riot. When I say it's going to be like a bomb exploding in the Southwark Playhouse, I think that is what it's going to be.
is it at all confusing with Five Bettys?
Well, they are very helpfully numbered. So we have Betty 1, Betty 2, Betty 3, Betty 4, and Betty 5. They are very different. And interestingly, Jen prescribes exactly what she wants from each Betty in the script. So Betty 1 can be white, Betty 2 can be white, Betty 3 needs to be something other than white, Betty 4 needs to be a race different from Betty 3, Betty 5 needs to be a different, you know. So in a way, she has prescribed BAME casting in a way that, which I think is really important, because she said to me that in previous productions of this show, it's so easy to whitewash it and to actually not follow that. And it is so written into the text that these women, these Bettys, and Betty becomes every woman, have really different backgrounds, and that is to do with their race and their ethnicity and where they grew up. And actually, in a world where we are trying to get so much more equality on our stages, both in terms of gender and ethnicity, it feels important to be that prescriptive for me.
I was going to say, because that's a specific place and time.
Exactly.
And we were at a point where we couldn't prescribe, because that was this negative.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I have had conversations with people who say, you know, is that negative actually to be so prescriptive the other way? And is it negative to be all female? You know, I've had conversations, mm-hmm. infuriating mm-hmm. conversations with men who say, but I feel underrepresented in your all female cast. And the thing I always say is, for me, it's about equality. The ultimate aim is equality, but we have a hell of a lot of corrective to get through. You know, the pendulum needs to swing the other way. We need to prescribe. We need to ensure that we have BAME, LGBTQ, female voices on our stages. And if that has to be written into the scripts for it to happen, so be it.
I don't think there was a big hullabaloo with 12 Angry Men.
Well, exactly. And
at the time.
And that is the thing. You know, people keep saying to me, why are women in theatre angry? You know, why do you feel the need to put on an all-female play? And you're like, why would you be asking this question if I was a man? Would you be asking this question if this was a play about men with the word rage in the title? I don't think you would be. And that to me, is the reason we have to do it.
Yeah. And it is very of its time, and it's now. That might change at another time. Okay, so tell me about Antic Face. Tell me about your production company.
So,
and why you founded it? To continue on a theme.
Yes, exactly. So Antic Phase is me and Charlie Parham, who I met at university, and we knew from the moment that we didn't do any work on our degrees that we wanted to make theatre together and that we wanted to carry on making theatre together. So it began with a very loose idea that we wanted to redress the imbalance in theatre, both in terms of gender and race, and redress inequality in general, which I think has now been honed over the 3.5-4 years that we've been running into a real commitment to championing new writing, which we feel is original and which is promoting those voices which are underrepresented. And that is particularly older actresses, BAME actresses, and LGBTQ performers. So the first show that we did, Hippolytus, was staged under the Victoria and Albert Museum.
Yes, in a tunnel.
It was in a tunnel. And I look back and I think, God, that was very naive. But actually, when you've just left university and you go to a drinks at the V&A and someone says, actually, I've always wanted someone to do a play in our tunnel, you think, wow, that's a free space. And exactly. Actually, that's pretty hard to come by.
Real estate is important.
Exactly. And what makes loads of sense is for us to do a Greek tragedy in this place, to do a never-before-performed version of a Greek tragedy and to make it all about Phaedra, to make Hippolytus from Phaedra's perspective, because actually that play for me is not about Hippolytus. It's about Phaedra, it's about Artemis, and it's about Aphrodite. Now, I just happened to play all three of them as well. I will admit that I did act in that. I'm an actor as well, and I acted in that production. I'm never going to produce an act in the same thing again because it is far too stressful. But that was our first show.
There was like too many hats. That's
too many
three
hats.
Three in the play.
Yeah, just the goddesses in the main part, and also, and it sounds like a vanity project, but I promise it wasn't. We just didn't have any money. So I played multiple parts. But it was a huge success, and there was something about doing it in a very feminist voice, in a very surprising location, which really caught the public's imagination, and we sold out and we made some money, and we were all as surprised as you look right now. We were all very surprised. But then we thought, right, we can take this money and carry on. And our next show was by a debut writer-performer called Charlotte Hamblin. It was called For Those Who Cry When They Hear the Foxes Scream, a very long title, but it was about a lesbian relationship and mental illness. So again, that was sort of furthering our commitment, particularly, from that production onwards to new writing and to underrepresented narratives. And then our last production, which was earlier last year in February at the Southwark Playhouse in the Little Space, was School Play, which was a departure for us because it was a very realist, political, comma tragedy, really, about the British primary education system. It was similar in that it was, again, exposing a narrative that we didn't feel had been explored before. But it was, it was a male playwright, and it was much more politically engaged. It was about policy. It was about educational policy. But once again, you realise when you expose a story like that that doesn't often get talked about, all these teachers came. All these teachers came and said, that's my life. I recognise it. And again, it was about a female headmistress and her experience as the head of a school and what it is like to have that pressure on you. And I absolutely love doing that because I love it when you tap into different audiences, and to have a teacher come up to you after a performance of School Play and go, thank you, because you put my professional life on stage, and to see it recognised like that is it means so much.
And it is different because it's not as though we don't hear a lot about teachers and head teachers and their frustrations and constraints, their failings and their successes on the news. But we hear about it in a stereotypical way. We hear it talked about in a stereotypical
Absolutely.
Way. The language around it. So when you make it a personal story and when you change the venue for it, when you change the medium, we can see that situation, which all of us who either went through school or have children, school is important for all of society,
completely.
If you are, an 80-year-old person who just got here. Having children and education in your community will be your community that supports you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So to sort of, I like that it's not only new voices, just because it's not like we haven't heard teachers or head teachers.
Exactly.
But not in this
way.
But
it's a reframing of a classic narrative, which we have seen, the History Boys, Dead Poets Society, again, very male-heavy, but it is so often broken down into, okay, the inspirational teacher who changed your life, or the bad teacher who ruined your life. And you're kind of like, but where are the real stories of the people in between?
The kiddie fiddlers.
And exactly, who are trying to get prophets. It right, yeah. And who are trying to negotiate the constantly changing educational policies in order to just look after these kids. And I really loved doing that, and it was, I think that was the production that really took us on to the next level, because it was a huge success and we really gained a following from it. And I really hope in the future that we might tour it around the UK, because it's regional theatre is really important to me as well. I don't think we should ever pretend that London is the only art centre of the UK, particularly for new writing. You know, Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds, there are fantastic things going on in those centres. And as you say, there are teachers everywhere and they want to hear this story.
And speaking of children, I think another twin aim of Antic Face was to engage and encourage young people to get into theater and not just as actors, directors, and writers.
Yeah.
There is a host of jobs.
Yeah.
And involvement that people can do. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly on this project, we have apart from Charlie, we have an entirely female production team. So our lighting designer, sound designer, stage management, everyone is a woman. And that is really refreshing. And it's one of the things I should mention we're doing after Collective Rage. We're doing a series of post-show events and we're doing a series of panels, which are fantastic. One of which is a feminist new writing panel. We've got stand-up, sketch, comedy, etc. But one of the things I'm organising at the moment is a series on the backstage life of theatre and women in backstage life, because as you can imagine, the technical side of theatre is very male dominated. You know, all the techies, all the people who do the fit up, who create the set, are typically men. And Kat Compson, our fantastic production manager, stage manager, is currently today going around car park places and trying to get aircon units, and she's dealing with all these men who won't really listen to her. And she called me up earlier and was like, I just feel like I'm not going to be able to get a good deal because I'm not a man. We don't think about that enough. And as you say, there are so many roles, and people find it really hard to get their first job, really hard to get their first job in theatre. And I think if you can provide a space which encourages people to grow organically and learn together on a show that everyone feels passionate about. That's the one thing that Charlie and I stipulate. Anyone who works with us, you've got to read the script and you've got to like what we're doing, because I don't want someone on the production team who's kind of like, I don't really get it. You know, I think if you're united by a passion, even if the budgets are tight, even if you've got to work long hours, and that does happen in theatre, you are united behind a vision that you want to make, you want to achieve.
Fantastic. Fabulous. Okay, so how do you go about, you know, so you're promoting new writing, but how do you go about, and you talked about, you know, sort of squirreling away scripts for later.
Yes.
That's one for me for later. But so how do you and Charlie decide, okay, it's this play right now? Why school play? Why Rage?
Yeah, it's always a sort of weird game of Tetris with actually, you know, organizing a show, because quite often you have a play and then you think, right, where's the venue? And then you have to get a venue confirmed, you need the dates confirmed, and then you have to find the cast. And it's hard sometimes to know whether you want the slot first or you want the play first. And quite often, one will dictate the other. So Charlie and I think because we started with Hippolytus at the V&A Museum...
In a cave,
exactly. We've always been very attached to space, because as bizarre as the cave sounds, what it actually was a tunnel that led from South Kensington Tube Station into the Victoria and Albert Museum. So during the day, it was just a passage that people walked through. And you walked out of it and up into the Roman Sculpture Gallery. So to stage a Greek tragedy, and most Greek tragedies take place outside of palaces, in a space that was quite literally a liminal space during the day, that was going up into this room of antiquity, it felt so special, and we felt the weight of history, and it was so live and organic, and we'd shut these big metal doors every night and we'd banish Hippolytus out into the tunnel, and then he'd come back in covered in blood, and it was so exciting. And I mean, down to we'd hear the busking saxophonist down the tunnel, you know, during my big speech, and it felt very reactive and very exciting. And I think ever since we did that, although so many of the theatres you rent in London, when you're making kind of fringe off West End theatre, are ultimately black boxes. But I think you have to feel some connection with the space. I think you have to want to do it there. We definitely had that with the Tristan Bates. It really felt like a space that we could create a kind of a mental asylum, which is this, you know, essentially where the character inhabits for the play. And similarly for School Play, we were able to create in Southwark, in the context of a huge local community of schools who came to see the show from Southeast London, a really realistic headmistress's office. And it's exactly the same with the Southwark Lodge, where we're doing Collective Rage. It used to be a car park garage. It's a very industrial space. And what we're creating is a boxing gym come rehearsal room, which is making use of all the metalwork and the girders and all those kind of things. So quite often, if you are, you know, how do these things come about? It will be an email from Chris Mernios at Southwark saying, we've got a slot. And Charlie and I going, actually, let's look at our creative pipeline. And we do that. We save plays that we're interested in. And we go, actually, okay, February, Southwark Playhouse Lodge, that's Collective Rage. You know, so it kind of, it all comes together at once. Mm. But you do, it's a waiting game. You have to wait for that to happen. And in terms of finding the plays themselves, as I said, I was very blessed to be editor of new writing at Oberon, where it was literally my job just to read plays all day, every day, go and find new writing. So I have a very long list of plays from there. And I would say to all young theatre makers who want to find new writing, go and read the anthologies, go and read, you know, there are so many brilliant companies who promote new writing festivals, things like the Susan Blackburn Smith Award. You know, I want to make writing by women, and they have the finalists from the last 15 years up on the website, and you can just look through and find the play, read it, and if it speaks to you, then try and find the space for it.
Fantastic. Okay, so that brings me to funding.
Funding.
The fun part of putting on a play.
Yes, the really, really difficult part of putting on a play. We have been incredibly lucky for School Play, our last show, and for this one to be funded by the Arts Council. But I will be honest, both times we had to apply twice. The application is long and challenging, and I do think it gets trickier every year. The arts are being cut. You know, all the subsidies are being cut all the time, and Brexit, as we know, is going to be terrible for the arts.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that, because things like farm subsidies have been protected, but Creative Europe, which had 5 billion euros at our disposal, is no longer at our disposal. And and theatre like the London Lifts Festival that happened every June, I don't know what its future will be, because it was in part funded by Creative Europe. I imagine you're going to have to start getting creative about funding sources.
Oh, completely, completely. And I think, you know, it's always under threat. Arts is always the first thing to do, to go. It's something that my father had to fight for an awful lot. And actually, when he started the National Theatre, it's fascinating because it was all before my time, but
just to educate our listeners that Emma's father was Peter Hall.
He was, and he started the National Theatre before my time, and I read stories now about the protests and the strikes and the huge amount of animosity towards him. And you look at it now, and you're like, that's why. That is why we fight. But it also is evidence that no matter what you try and do in the arts, you will always have to try and safeguard it and defend your right to do it.
Yes, because, okay, I feel, and you obviously feel, that arts are absolutely necessary for us. But they aren't as necessary as food. You know. And so when people, you know, are looking at austerity and those kinds of things, the arts are
I think it's very easy for politicians to sit in Westminster and go, well, you know, just take the money away from Hampstead Theatre or take the money away from there. But actually, you know, as my dad always said, you know, it is the last vestige of us coming together as a collective community, particularly in a world where we are increasingly fragmented by social media and the internet. The fact that people still want to come together and watch live events is so precious, and we must defend it. And in the context of a show like this, yes, it is political and it's challenging, but it's also really entertaining, and it's a good night out, and it's escapism. And that's the sort of theatre I want to make. Theatre that can, you know, take people away and use their imagination, but also make them think something new.
That was the original idea of theater. That's what the Greeks were doing. That was
Hippolytus. That's Hippolytus.
Exactly. Yeah. It was infotainment.
Yeah.
It was before the archers.
Exactly.
It was infotainment.
Exactly.
It was teaching people.
Yeah.
It was social,
yes,
debate and discussion and entertainment and theater and community.
I couldn't agree more. But I also strongly feel that it can't be too much one or the other. I think there's a lot of theater now which is overly political and therefore alienates the audience, and a lot of theater that is overly entertainment and doesn't seek to challenge the audience in any way. You need to hit that sweet spot in the middle, and that's when something really magical happens. And I do believe it's happening in this show, just to promote it a little bit more.
Excellent. And if you want to enjoy that sweet spot yourself, go to the Southwark Playhouse from January 24th to February 17th for Antic Faces, production of Collective Rage, a play in Five Bettys by Jen Silverman. For more information and more fascinating women, please go to www.radiogorgeous.com. Thank you so much, Emma Hall.
Thank you.